This is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, and this is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, July 10th, 2019. Ahead on our show, a new installment of Reflections in Black with Raven Cook. Today, she explores the life of Thomas Andrew Dorsey, a legend in gospel music. After Ozarks, beginning at 1 on 91.3, it's Here and Now from NPR. Today, President Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines has been cozying up to China despite China's encroachment in the South China Sea. Some experts are worried about China's long-term plans for the region. Here and Now's series on China's impact on Asia continues this afternoon after this edition of Ozarks at Large. And tonight, you can take in a century of black holes and gravitational waves at the Fayetteville Public Library. Dr. Daniel Kenefick, Associate Professor of Physics at the University of Arkansas, will lead the talk beginning at 6 tonight. He's also the author of the new book, No Shadow of a Doubt, The 1919 Eclipse That Confirmed Einstein's Theory of Relativity. His talk is free. Registration is requested by the library. You can learn more at faylib.org. This is Ozarks at Large. For decades, legendary stories began at the Rockwood Club on Highway 71B between downtown Fayetteville and Drake Field. Legends played there. Jerry Lee Lewis and Wanda Jackson. The musicians who would evolve into the band started there. Teenagers named Ernie and Earl Kate would play there as the Del Reys. Since the Rockwood opened in 1947, it has been a rock and roll venue, a restaurant, a disco, and for years at a time, empty. This weekend, a celebration that new ownership wants to be the start of a resurrection of the Rockwood will include a tour of the landmark. Last month, we went a bit early to get a look around.
Space-wise, but...
Mark Risk punches a code to disable the security system in the Rockwood. It's a stone building on the edge of Fayetteville that has hosted rock and roll history.
Okay, we're entering the original... venue and where the stage was and the dance floor was here. Of course, these walls and this partition stuff wasn't here. But here is where the action was.
Mark Risk owns the Rockwood now, and he wants it to be a living shrine to the region's musical history. Built in 1947, the Rockwood in 2019 is not quite at full glory. It's a bit musty, and there is some 1970s red shag upstairs. The inside's a labyrinth, the result of multiple add-ons over the decades. But anybody with an interest in the development of rock and roll gets excited at the stories that began here, stories of Jerry Lee Lewis at the piano, and dozens of others, too, says Mark Risk.
Carl Perkins, Roy Orbison, Chuck Berry, Sonny Burgess and the...
Pacers.
Billy Conway Twitty. Yeah. He played here as both Harold Jenkins and the Rockhausers, and then he changed his name and came back and he was Conway Twitty.
And that list goes on. Rockabilly legend and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member Wanda Jackson played here in the 50s, Billy Lee Riley, and many others. Local legends, too. A listing from 1951 indicates Herman Tuck, who would later found Herman's Rib House in Fayetteville, played at the Rockwood every Wednesday night with his trio. And the Kay brothers were regulars, first playing in the band the Del Reys, and Mark Risk says even earlier, as teenagers too young to be admitted to watch Jerry Lee Lewis perform, so they camped out in a side parking lot.
And they got here at 4:30 in the afternoon in their car, and they parked right here. It's right here. And this used to be the exhaust fan. They didn't have air conditioning back then, so this was an exhaust fan. And obviously it's been filled in now, but they could hear the music sitting here. And Jerry Lee played right over there.
Because we're on the opposite side of where the stage would have been.
Yeah, and he said that was a very formative thing in his career, that he wanted to become a musician. When he just, Jerry Lee, I could see that. And the activity and the fun, and I guess all that was going on. And it was about maybe a couple years later, he's here, they're playing as the Del Reys.
Risk wants to capture the history of the Rockwood in the next phase of the building's existence. He wants to eventually open the venue as a link to the past and present. One part musical heritage site for the region, one part stage for live music on occasion. Sunday, the Rockwood will be open for tours. in its current raw state at 3 o'clock. There are blueprints Risk unrolls on top of a desk in a front office at the Rockwood Building that display how the club will be transformed, he hopes, this time.
So this would be where the door is now. I think I want to keep the door there. Now, he's got this entry moved over because this is where you'd walk downstairs to go into.
He has plans for the inside, but he says he doesn't want to ignore the outside either.
This building sits up on this hill, and I was quite pleasantly surprised at what a view it has from here.
Spaces and, outside the Rockwood offer, especially in winter, great views of the downtown Fayetteville Square, the Fayetteville Public Library, and Old May.
So one thought is to have some sort of beer garden out here, a little garden area, kind of like George's back room used to be a long time ago. Yeah, you can see old courthouse. Anyway, so behind there, there's 2.25 acres here. It's a large tract of land. This was employee parking back here and an overflow parking down there. And there's a driveway that goes all the way around, but down close to the fence and comes back up the other side. So we got parking. Really, and that's my goal is to make sure that everybody can come in here, has a place to park, and they're going to have a seat at a table, hopefully.
To bring live music back to the Rockwood would mean ending a decades-long drought of such activity in the building. First opened in late 1947, the club has an origin that fits the rebelliousness of rock and roll. Mark Riss says original owner George Lennox decided to have the Rockwood built to get just beyond the Fayetteville city limits, where at that time, an old law prohibited the sale of alcohol and dancing under the same roof. According to research from Sandra Cox Birchfield, a historian and writer, the early Rockwood boasted a dance floor, a beer lounge, and another dance floor on the roof. That the Rockwood still has a solid foundation and strong walls more than 70 years later may be linked to the building's construction consultant, a young Fay Jones, the architect behind Thorn Crown Chapel, recipient of the American Institute of American Architects' highest honor, the AIA Gold Medal, and namesake of the University of Arkansas's School of Architecture.
And interestingly, Fay Jones had a hand in it. We found out that he knew the guy who was building it, was apparently hired as an advisor while he was in college.
Risk says Fay Jones was specifically asked to advise with the multiple levels, stairs, and other design elements. In an interview with the late Roy Reed, Jones called the Rockwood his first paying job in the field.
His story was that he would have to come up here on Saturday night to collect his fees from the guys who ran the place until they could get them paid. And he would go out next day, and take his wife to dinner with that money at the Venetian Inn.
There are several famous names connected to this place, some more firmly than others. Bill Clinton has said he visited as a teenager during a trip to Fayetteville. Future Grammy winner Charlie Rich reportedly patronized the club during a brief tenure as a student at the University of Arkansas. And the stories of who got on stage can be peppered with folk heroes, too. Mark Riss says New Orleans native P. Fountain spent a night there with his clarinet before a 1963 gig the next day at the University of Arkansas. Risk says the story goes that Ronnie Hawkins, founder of the Hawks and one-time owner of the Rockwood, was on stage that night.
Apparently, Ronnie knew who he was. He knew who he was. And this is when, late enough when the band guys were in the Hawks. And Ronnie saw Pete and said, kind of just not play. And so Pete said, yeah, he went out to the vehicle, got his clarinet, and he came in. He played two sets with them. And Chris said it was one of the greatest things he'd ever seen. And after that show, Pete told him, he said, you know that band? Those guys are going to be famous someday. And sure enough, they became the band. So that happened here.
Another band, the Champs, played the Rockwood when the lineup likely included the musicians who would later become Seals and Croft, as well as a young Arkie named Glenn Campbell. Over time, the Rockwood would evolve. It was called the R&S Club, the Flaming Arrow, and had a brief run in the 1970s as St. Michael's Disco Alley, where a young Mark Risk worked as a bartender. Now, Mark wants it all to come full circle. There's about 9,500 square feet to work with here, and plans for the future could include a beer garden, a catering kitchen for outside food to be brought in and prepared for events, and much more. He says there's plenty of excitement, but a bit of intimidating work ahead as well.
Well, 100% of it's exciting, for sure. Intimidating, probably maybe at least half of it, you know, because you got so many
things that could go wrong. You got an old building here, we don't know how much money it's going to take. The financing issues, what we're going to discover when we start knocking in these walls and things like that.
He's looking for pictures and memorabilia anybody might have that's connected to the Rockwood. He'd like to have an eventual museum space at the club. And Mark's blueprints for the future indicate he's got plenty of other ideas.
These are actually overhead doors that go up and down, and we'll have decks out. This will be the load-in area. There'll be a green room somewhere in this. And we're hoping to get the capacity up to around 400. I know we can get 300, but I'm thinking maybe 400. You might be able to get more if it's standing room only, but like I said, I hope that this is where people my age, we got tables and chairs and everybody sits down. But for some events, we want to be flexible where we can pull that stuff out and have a young people stand up, whatever they call it, jump up and down type thing.
A jump up and down type of thing in a place where a young Jerry Lee Lewis performed? Sounds like another full circle. The Rockwood Club at 24th Street and Highway 71B, below the Fayetteville Country Club, will be open for tours Sunday afternoon beginning at 3. Then at 5, at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street, live music featuring Earl and Them, 1 Ounce Jig, and the Boss Tweeds will continue the party.
I'm going to tell you a story about a Mary Lou. I mean the kind of a woman make a fool of you. She make a young man grow. She took my money, was a crying shame.
A Mary Lou,
Mary Lou.
She took my diamond ring.
A Mary Lou,
Mary Lou.
She took my watch and chain.
Mary Lou.
She took the keys to my Cadillac car. Jumped in my kitty and she drove afar. Left me stranded in a Kalamazoo. Making her a fortune off a fool like you. She got her a rich man, had a dozen kids. Drove that cat until he flipped his lid.
Mary Lou.
She took my diamond.
That's Ronnie Hawkins, one of the pivotal figures in the history of the Rockwood Club and a pivotal figure in rock and roll history. He was born in Huntsville and moved to Fayetteville with his family when he was a child. He would eventually own and operate the Rockwood, then be a founding member of the band, then move to Canada. We could spend an entire hour of our show discussing Hawkins and his influence, but today we'll spend just a couple of minutes. In August 2005, Hawkins sat down with Jim Blair to record a conversation that's archived with the Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. During that visit, Hawkins told Jim Blair about playing music with a young musician known years ago as Cowboy Ray Thornton. Thornton would later be known by other titles like Congressman, Arkansas Supreme Court Justice, President of Arkansas State University, President of the University of Arkansas System, and Arkansas Attorney General. We could probably spend another hour just devoted to the life of Ray Thornton. Anyway, from that 2005 conversation with Jim Blair, here is Ronnie Hawkins talking about a connection to Ray Thornton that happened years after the cowboy had been dropped from Thornton's identity.
Yeah. Great story about Cowboy Ray. It's a true story, he'll tell you. He'd become, what's the big lawyer of the state, the Crown Attorney?
The Attorney General.
Attorney General, then. He was Attorney General for a while, right?
Yeah, he was.
All right, well, I don't know anything about that kind of stuff. I just know him as Cowboy Ray. So I'm up there with a young cat that I think is going to be big time sometime. He's playing right, we're running around. His name was Gordon Lightfoot. And so we went out one night from Gordon's house and went to a bar to watch the girls, go-go girls a little bit. And they overserved us at the club.
Yeah, it's their fault.
They overserved us, and we went back, and I thought, well, I want Cowboy Ray Thornton to hear this song. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I called him, and his wife answered the phone and all this, and she got in. He got on the phone, and Gordon Lightfoot sung Early Morning Rain on the telephone, because he was as drunk as I was, Gordon. And that's a good story, because he'll tell you it's absolutely true.
Ronnie Hawkins talking with Jim Blair in August 2005. That conversation is archived by the Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History and can be found at their website, pryorcenter.uark.edu, along with scores of other interviews about Arkansas history. And tonight, by the way, the Pryor Center will host somebody with plenty of firsthand knowledge of Arkansas history, Ernie Dumas. He's covered Arkansas politics from Governor Cherry to now, and he will talk about his 60 years of observing and writing about Arkansas tonight at the Pryor Center on the Fayetteville Square. Ernie Dumas's latest book is titled The Education of Ernie Dumas, Chronicles of the Arkansas Political Mind. His talk is part of the Pryor Center's Summer Lecture Series. Begins at 6 tonight. You can find out more at pryorcenter.uark.edu. And just ahead on Ozarks, the Pack Shack is a Northwest Arkansas-based nonprofit that has now provided 30 million meals to those in need around the country.
And then when word really started to spread, we found ourselves in Washington, D.C. and in San Francisco, and we were just a small organization.
Details in about 1 minute on this edition of Ozarks at Large.
KUAF is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, presenting two unique summer exhibitions, Nature's Nation Indoors, illuminating the connection between art and nature with works by artists including Ansel Adams and Georgia O'Keeffe, and Color Field Outdoors, featuring colorful interactive sculptures in an Ozark forest. CrystalBridges.org for more information. Additional support comes from Butterfield Trail Village, a premier Northwest Arkansas retirement community catering to active lifestyles and resident well-being. Offering a variety of amenities and living options from apartments to village homes, plus on-site fitness facilities. ButterfieldTrailVillage.org for more.
This is Ozarks at Large. Established in 2013, the Pack Shack is a Northwest Arkansas-based nonprofit that makes the battle against hunger fun by hosting Feed the Funnel parties. Volunteers pack food for those in need at these events, which may feature a disco ball, dancing, music, and a gong. As of this week, the organization has surpassed 30 million meals packed. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda visited the Pack Shack's Cave Springs office yesterday to speak with CEO Brett Raymond about the milestone. They began the conversation by discussing the goals of the nonprofit.
The Pack Shack is involved in increasing awareness about hunger issues that face communities across the country. We give everyone a way to engage by packing meals, and then we encourage them to stay connected with local nonprofits in their own community. And we do that primarily through our crazy fun, Feed the Funnel parties, where people come together to pack thousands of delicious, healthy meals that, again, stay in the local communities where they live to help their neighbors in need.
So based in Northwest Arkansas, but serving people around the country, do you have any idea how many people you serve annually?
This year we'll serve probably around 50,000 people who will participate in parties. Those 50,000 people will pack anywhere from 9 to 10 million meals this year.
How did you expand from the local community here in Northwest Arkansas to across the country? Was that a goal from the beginning, or did that just kind of happen?
Well, it was always a goal to expand beyond Northwest Arkansas because the need goes well beyond Northwest Arkansas. How that happened is the fun part of the story. And that really came through word of mouth. You know, people who had experienced a Feed the Funnel party were like, man, that's so much fun. And, you know, and then they would tell their friends. And then we started getting calls from, you know, faraway places like Little Rock and Tulsa and things. And then when word really started to spread, we found ourselves in Washington, D.C. and in San Francisco. And we were just a small organization. And yeah, so then we, you know, ended up putting teams in Columbus, Ohio and Orlando, Florida as well. But we go nationwide. We've worked in over 40 states now. We've engaged over 150,000 people to pack over 30 million meals now.
Right. You hit that milestone of 30 million meals.
Yeah, this week, as a matter of fact. And so we're thankful that we've had the opportunity to be involved in so many people's lives and providing delicious food and healthy food for them. It's also a realization that there's a great need and a continual need for a lot of folks out there.
What prompted you to start this organization?
Yeah, so I had worked in international pediatric nutrition and lived in East Africa. And when I came back to Northwest Arkansas, where we had lived before, I just started asking questions about local hunger and nutrition issues. And really, rather than starting the Pack Shack, I really like to say that it emerged from those 8 months of conversations. So when we had our first Feed the Funnel party, 900 people participated to pack 200,000 meals because they had all contributed to the idea of the Pack Shack. I just happened to be the one that was, you know, kind of stewarding those conversations.
Let's discuss these Feed the Funnel parties. If I want to participate in a Feed the Funnel party, mm-hmm. what will I experience?
Yeah, well, you know, the reason we call it a party is because people want to do something fun. You know, if you go to volunteer, which is fantastic, and we live in the most generous country in the world in terms of people volunteering time and resources, you want to have a good time. So we said from the beginning, let's do something that's going to be really, really fun. Nobody really likes to go to an event, but people love to go to parties. And so we wanted to make it a party. So that means we've got loud music. If you're in our Cave Springs party room, we've got disco ball and party lights and a great sound system and, you know, spontaneous dance parties break out and maybe a hula hoop contest and karaoke. You just never know, but it's going to be a lot of fun. But then the actual process of packing the meal is really serious because, number one, we take food safety very seriously, and the meal itself is really important because it provides a great source of protein and vitamins and minerals. And we developed this meal with the expert assistance of the chefs at Tyson Foods, who have been so generous to us. So all of that comes together in a Feed the Funnel party. So when you come to one, yeah, you get to wear a groovy hairnet. That's just going to happen, and you're going to look fabulous in it. You're going to have on gloves. You know, we take all the food safety precautions, but then those meals are going to be packed really well. Local nonprofits that you choose to donate the meals to will also come to the party. They'll talk about why these meals are going to help them and the people they serve. And then at the end of the party, we load up their vehicle with those meals so they can start to get them to the people who need them.
So what's an example of a meal that I might be putting together?
Yeah. These are put together in really well-designed bags. It looks like, you know, something you'd get off the store shelf. Our most popular meal is a cheesy rice and vegetable meal, which is delicious. And when you make one bag of this, it fills a 13x9 casserole dish. And you can do a lot more with it, too. My favorite recipe, I make tacos from this. So I'll put some Rotel and some extra shredded chicken and maybe a little taco seasoning. But then it stands up really nice in a tortilla. You can make grilled cheese from this. You can make different types of casseroles. We even have recipes for leftovers that you can use. So it's really versatile. But it's really nutritious. So the number one form of malnutrition globally is a protein deficiency. And so we made sure, number one, that this meal has protein in it. So it's a vegetable protein. So that's really, really critical. Number two is it's fortified with 19 vitamins and minerals. So a lot of people aren't getting the right vitamins and minerals that they need, especially kids. And so we wanted to make sure that kids were getting protein and vitamins and minerals in this meal.
And where does the food come from? Do you purchase that yourself or is that donated?
We purchase all of the food. We maintain really strict supply chains in terms of product quality and everything that a normal food manufacturer would do. And because we pack so many meals, we're ordering, you know, every 2 to 3 weeks to keep our warehouse going and all of the parties staffed and stocked appropriately. Most of the ingredients, well, of course, Arkansas rice, of course, and then other ingredients from throughout the Midwest.
So what comes next for you? 30 million is quite the milestone, but I suspect you're not done.
Yeah, we're not done. You know, we introduced another product this year, our pasta parmesan product. And so that's fantastic. So we're working on expanding its availability, which, you know, we need. We've got to manage our warehouse space appropriately for that. But it's a fantastic product that we also developed with the chefs at Tyson. So getting the pasta parmesan product out. And then we're also looking at putting a location in Dallas. We're down there, it feels like, every week anyway. Businesses, opportunities have really grown there. So we hope to expand into Dallas. But, you know, it's really inspiring our friends and neighbors to just live as neighbors toward one another, which to us, that's real. We call it be neighborly. And what that means to us is know our neighbors, understand their struggles and challenges, have compassion, and importantly, take action. And that's something that can be done in a Feed the Funnel party, but doesn't have to stop there. We hope it continues and that people will get involved, not just with the local organizations that are near to them, but that they'll have their eyes open to people in need around them where it's just neighbors taking care of neighbors.
Well, congratulations on the milestone, and thanks for talking to us today.
Thanks. I really appreciate you coming out.
That was Brett Raymond, CEO of the Pack Shack, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. More information about the nonprofit's work is available at thepackshack.org. We, too, have a website, ozarksatlarge.com, where you can hear stories, interviews, and entire editions of Ozarks once again. And if you'd like to share a story, such as the one we just heard about the Pack Shack with Antoinette Grajeda, you can do that with links that we provide at ozarksatlarge.com. And if you can't always listen to us at noon or 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, or Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large, don't forget to subscribe to the absolutely free podcast we have available. That's found where almost anywhere you find MP3s, including Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. This is the Wednesday, July 10th, 29 edition of Ozarks at Large. Thank you for spending part of your day with us. It was on this day in 1961 that five freedom riders from St. Louis tested the Supreme Court decision to integrate bus terminals at the Little Rock bus station at Markham and Louisiana. The five were arrested despite the high court's order and taken to the city's jail. They were later released and allowed to travel to New Orleans. The bus terminals in Little Rock and Arkansas were eventually integrated in November of that year.
This is Reflections in Black, and I'm your host, Raven Cook. Reflections in Black is a segment dedicated to exploring the legacy of Black Americans in the United States and around the globe. Reflections in Black also provides resources for understanding and hope for all people. Thomas Andrew Dorsey was born on July 1st, 1899, to a revivalist preacher in Villa Rica, Georgia. In 1908, the Dorsey family moved from their small town to the big city of Atlanta, Georgia, where Dorsey began to hear blues from voices like Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey. At the age of 12, Dorsey was already displaying a great skill on the piano. And along with millions of other Black Americans, Dorsey took his talents and moved to Chicago in the Great Migration. The Great Migration moved millions of Black Americans from the limitations and overt racism in the South to the North, where they believed more opportunity was possible. Despite many African Americans' disillusionment by the racist practices in the North, they brought with them music and culture from the South. Upon Dorsey's arrival in Chicago, he studied musical composition at Chicago's College of Music and Arranging. While many Black Americans made music in that time, the ability to read music provided with it an element of respectability, but also provided a way to take music made by Black Americans and pass it down through generations. Dorsey would begin his musical career as a pianist for the same individuals that he had grown up listening to, particularly Ma Rainey. Dorsey, like many musicians of the day, would dance between the lines of religious and secular music. He recorded dozens of songs through the 1920s and early 1930s, but in 1932, the death of Dorsey's wife and infant child would radically transition the young musician's life, and he would compose his most famous song, Precious Lord. While traveling throughout Black churches in the United States trying to sell his arrangements, Dorsey enlisted the help of singers known as demonstrators to publicly demonstrate musical arrangements. One of Dorsey's demonstrators that would take his song Precious Lord to an international audience was Mahalia Jackson. In 1933, Thomas Dorsey founded the National Convention of Gospel Choirs and Choruses. He would go on to remarry and have another child. Thomas A. Dorsey's contribution to gospel music would continue the rest of his life, composing music that would be sung by Elvis Presley and Arkansas's own Rosetta Tharpe. The father of gospel music, Thomas Dorsey, would fade into relative obscurity until the 1980s, when a documentary would chronicle his life in service to the gospel. In 1993, at the age of 93, Thomas Dorsey's life of service to the good news would end, but he left for us a legacy of music, reminding us to keep on through all of life's ups and downs, knowing that we have a purpose. Today, we honor a legend in music and culture, the father of gospel music, Mr. Thomas A. Dorsey. Thank you.
Reflections in Black is a production of 91.3 KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville. You can hear weekly segments on Ozarks at Large, and you can learn more and hear past editions at KUAF.com/reflections.
This is Ozarks at Large. Voters in northeastern Benton County are giving approval to an increase in fees for the Northeast Benton County Volunteer Fire Department. The proposal, the first increase in 20 years, passed by two votes, 212 to 210 yesterday. The turnout represents about 18% of eligible voters in that precinct. An advocacy group plans to file a pair of ballot petitions to allow for recreational sales of marijuana in Arkansas and to create a dedicated court to allow expungement of low-level marijuana convictions. The Drug Policy Education Group says it plans to file the petitions today with the Arkansas Secretary of State to begin collecting signatures for the initiatives to be placed on the 2020 ballot. Melissa Foltz, the group's executive director, says initial taxes from recreational sales would go toward the state Alcoholic Beverage Control Division, which, like with medicinal cannabis, would oversee recreational dispensaries.
After that, 60% of the tax dollars go for pre-K and after-school care. And the most at-risk districts will get the first of the money. And then the other 40% will go to UAMS.
The recreational marijuana amendment would allow for a minimum of 120 dispensaries in the state, as well as home cultivation of six plants. Foltz says licensing would be separate from the state's existing medical marijuana commission. The second proposed amendment would allow a five-year period for people convicted for possessing fewer than 16 ounces of marijuana to have those convictions sealed. The Conservative Family Council has come out against the proposed amendments. A new analysis places Walmart as, still, the largest retailer in the United States. A recent sales revenue list published by Stores Magazine puts the Bentonville-based retailer well ahead of Amazon. Walmart, according to the list, is number one with more than $387 billion in annual U.S. sales through more than 5,200 U.S. stores and locations. Amazon is second with revenue of about $121 billion and nearly 500 stores, mostly Whole Foods stores, now owned by Amazon. There is more about the ranking and the current state of retail at our partner, TalkBusiness.net. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg will speak in Little Rock on September 3rd as part of a lecture series hosted by the Clinton Foundation. Jay Barth, a political science professor at Hendricks College, says the event will be a rare opportunity.
Anytime a Supreme Court justice makes a public appearance, it's consequential because it's a body that tends to do a lot of its work in private. And so it's still fairly rare that you have justices who are overtly public in talking about the workings of the court and their life on the court.
According to the Clinton Foundation, Justice Ginsburg will speak about her time on the Supreme Court as well as her prior legal career. The event is free to the public, but there is already a wait list due to high demand for tickets.
The debates have begun, finding it hard to keep track of the candidates, the campaigns, the issues, the drama. Morning Edition can help, with a sharp focus on the race towards 2020. And if all the politics has you feeling dizzy, don't worry. You still get a steady dose of science, technology, the arts, and human interest stories from around the world. Find your perfect balance with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition every weekday morning from 5 to 9 on 91.3 KUAF. And during Morning Edition at 5:30 and 7:30, you can hear news and information from our region with Antoinette Grajeda's newscast. We are in the Harold and Blanche Koch News Studio. Say we because Timothy Dennis is with me. Timothy, how are you?
I'm great, Kyle. How are you?
Very good. This is the time each week when we talk about live music. Rockwood Club won't be open for music for a little while yet, but there are plenty of other places where we can catch music.
Yes, there are. And let's hit some of the high points. Some.
Okay.
I say some because just like most weekends in Northwest Arkansas, there's way too much to cover in this short little segment.
Okay.
Let's start with Thursday night. George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville is going to have two bands on stage. Vandaliers, which is an alt-country band with punk roots. They're a six-piece outfit from Dallas. They'll be joined on that bill by Dandelion Heart, which is a local group of singer-songwriters, all of which are females.
Yeah, just had them in the Furman Garner Performance Studio recently.
They're incredible.
Yeah.
I'm a long time traveling here below. I'm a long time traveling. I'm a long time traveling here below to lay this body down.
If you can't make that show at George's, which is a free show, by the way, Dandelion Heart will be at Mothership in Springdale Friday night at 8.
Okay.
But that show Thursday night at George's starts at 9 p.m. Also happening in Fayetteville Thursday night, Ponder the Albatross will be at Kingfish.
All right.
That's an incredible band name.
Yeah.
They are a Colorado-based bluegrass folk rock fusion band. That show at Kingfish starts at 8 o'clock Thursday night. They will also perform at Chelsea's in Eureka Springs Friday night at 9. Still happening in Fayetteville Thursday night, Anitra J will be at Dixon Street Pub.
On a dime and a dream, I bought a new life and it's here, purchased by my
She performs kind of funky soul music. Her roots are kind of in gospel and jazz and soul.
When is this?
This is Thursday night at Dixon Street Pub at 8 p.m. She will also be at Brick Street Brews Friday night at 8 in Rogers.
Okay.
And at Brews in Eureka Springs Saturday at 7.
So all kinds of chances. Boy, if you go to Dixon Street Pub and fall in love with her music, you can just follow her all over the area.
Exactly.
All right.
Let's move on to Friday night. Emily Rowland will be at Dixon Street Pub.
Okay.
She's an incredible local singer-songwriter, incredible voice. That show Friday night with Emily Rowland starts at 8:30 at Dixon Street Pub. Moving on to other shows happening Friday night, Route 358 will be at Weston Watson in Fayetteville.
And this is Friday night?
It's Friday night.
Okay.
If you are unaware of who Route 358 is, where have you been? They are a local family folk band from Northwest Arkansas, and they are great.
Mm-hmm.
That show at Weston Watson gets underway at 10 o'clock Friday night. Also happening Friday night up the road at Black Apple Crossing in Springdale, the Kyle Sexton Band will be on stage.
Where did all the people go? Hiding out in places on their own. For once the shadow leaves your home. Don't forget the past is what you know. And I have this feeling the world it keeps on bleeding. Crying out in mercy, losing.
If you can't see them Friday night at Black Apple Crossing, they'll be at Kingfish Saturday night in Fayetteville.
You have become Mr. Option here.
I'm trying to give plenty of options for plenty of price points, plenty of times, plenty of different styles.
Okay.
Moving on. Sad Palomino and the Chads will be at The Odd in Eureka Springs. It's a continuation of the Alt at the Odd series.
Smoking on the highway.
That is an all-ages show, has a $10 cover, and it will get underway at 8 o'clock Friday night. Again, that's The Odd in downtown Eureka Springs. Moving on to Saturday. George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville is going to feature four different metal bands.
Mm-hmm.
Dead Bird, Vore, Serpentine, and Bones of the Earth. Most of those bands are from Fayetteville. All of them are from Arkansas, so they're billing it as the natural state of metal. Tickets for that show are $7 in advance, $10 day of. It'll get underway at 8 o'clock Saturday night. Again, that's George's in Fayetteville. Then happening up in Bentonville Saturday night, Goose will be at Bike Rack Brewing Company.
That's great. We haven't talked about them for a while, have
no,
we?
No, I haven't seen them play in a while, but I could be wrong on that. But they'll be playing out on the patio.
And I got no real reason for me to be changing my way. It's done, it's done as far as I can see. And I've seen better days. Down the river I go.
That show at Bike Rack Brewing Company in Bentonville will get underway at 7 o'clock Saturday night. And happening over in Eureka Springs, Cadillac Jackson will be at Chelsea's. Fantastic mashup of funk and electronica, always a fun show. That show at Chelsea's gets underway at 9 o'clock Saturday night. Still in Eureka Springs Saturday night, Jimmy Wayne Garrett will be at the Gravel Bar.
Fun.
He's a great local blues singer and guitarist. That show at the Gravel Bar gets underway at 7 o'clock Saturday night. More blues music, but happening downtown in Fort Smith, Harry's Downtown will have Lee and the Mojo Doctors.
Some of my very, very favorite people in the world are in Lee and the Mojo Doctors.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and they're great musicians, again, local blues and rock music. That show at Harry's Downtown has a $5 cover. It will get underway at 9 o'clock Saturday night. Still in Fort Smith Saturday night, Wynonna Judd will be at Temple Live.
No kidding.
No kidding.
Jesus and jukebox brings comfort to his soul. One says he'll see her again. One helps him let her go. He carries that old cross right down to the last bar on the floor.
They will be starting at 7 p.m., tickets start at $45. They go up by $5 the day of. And again, that's at Temple Live in Fort Smith. Moving on to Sunday, the next Beer and Hymns will take place at Bike Rack Brewing Company in Bentonville.
Do we know the theme?
The theme this month is Stars and Stripes.
Oh.
So, patriotic theme.
Okay.
Proceeds from this edition of Beer and Hymns will support Sheepdog Impact Assistance, which is an organization that assists and engages law enforcement, EMS, fire, and military personnel.
And that's Sunday night.
That's Sunday night at Bike Rack Brewing Company in Bentonville, and it gets underway at 5 o'clock.
And if you don't know, Beer and Hymns is somewhat interactive.
Exactly. So the idea is that you get a glass of beer, you sing along with some hymns and some songs that are tied to the theme for the month.
Right.
And proceeds benefit a different nonprofit every single month.
Excellent.
And that's about it, unless you're going to see Hootie and the Blowfish at the Amp Sunday night.
What?
Yeah, Hootie and the Blowfish are going to be at the Walmart Amp. The cheap seats are sold out, but there are still tickets left. They start at about $90, and that will get underway at 7:30 Sunday night.
Okay.
So you really got to want to go see Hootie and the Blowfish to go see them.
I have that CD. I won't be there Sunday night, though. All right. Timothy Dennis, thank you so much.
Thank you.
But you want to wear my ring. Well, there's nothing I can do. I only want to be with you. You can call me a fool. I only want to be with you.
Oh, that takes you back. This is Ozarks at Large. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals will play one more game in North Little Rock before coming back to Arvest Ballpark tomorrow night. Last night, the Nats evened their three-game series with the Arkansas Travelers with a 2-1 victory. Final game of the series in Central Arkansas tonight begins at 7:10. Tomorrow night's homestand opener against Tulsa will have a first pitch at 7:05 in Springdale. A former pitcher for the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Lions is about to begin a professional career. Javon Rigsby has signed a contract with the Milwaukee Milkmen of the American Association of Independent Professional Baseball. Rigsby led the Lions last year in ERA, complete games, shutouts, innings pitched, and strikeouts. He tied for the team lead in wins with 5. His 10 complete games last season set the UAFS school record in that category and led the entire NCAA Division II for 2019. Rigsby graduated from UAFS in May, By the way, the closest the Milwaukee Milkmen will play to us will be games against the Gary, Indiana-based South Shore Railcats. And the last chance of rain for a week or so is in tonight's forecast. The National Weather Service places a 40% chance of showers or thunderstorms in tonight's forecast for the Arkansas River Valley. 30% chance of showers or thunderstorms tonight in northwest Arkansas. Highs tomorrow expected to be in the upper 80s in northwest Arkansas, around 93 in downtown Fort Smith. This weekend, sunshine and highs in the lower to mid-90s.
Support for KUAF comes from Malco Theaters, featuring the Metropolitan Opera's Summer Encore HD production of Barber of Seville. Today, Wednesday, July 10th, beginning at 7 p.m. at the Razorback Cinema in Fayetteville. Malco.com for tickets and information. The Delta Dental of Arkansas Foundation is Arkansas's nonprofit dental health plan. With more than 30 years of experience, Delta Dental offers specialized dental coverage for employees and family members of Arkansas businesses, nonprofits, and governmental organizations with a mission to improve health and to be the leading force in the delivery of quality dental insurance services. More information at ArkansasMissionOfMercy.org.
Drivers near downtown Bentonville, take note. There will be some work around the intersection of John DeShields Boulevard and Northeast J Street next week. Crews will be working on a new roundabout near the entrance to Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. Work is scheduled to begin Monday at 7 a.m. and last until 5 p.m. each day of the work. That will be completed in phases with sidewalk construction. The city of Bentonville expects the project to be completed by late October. Springdale drivers can expect road closures even earlier, like tomorrow and Friday. East Wagon Wheel between North 64th and Corey Street will be closed for 2 days so the city's public works can install pipes. The closures are from 8 until 3 each day. Traffic will be rerouted through Clay Avenue. Tomorrow, the southbound lane of Holcomb Street and Springdale between Carter and Quant will be closed to repair a water leak. The northbound lane will remain open, but if that's part of your daily commute, expect a few delays.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, this week on Latino USA. East Harlem poet Willie Perdomo takes us on a tour of Spanish Harlem, the neighborhood where he grew up, and talks about how the barrio helped shape him.
This is where I learned how to play cards. This is where I saw my first gun. This was everything.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Latino USA, Saturday afternoon at 3 on 91.3 KUAF. And for a complete schedule of all of our weekend programs, you can go to KUAF.com.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Today in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio with Haley Pratt. She's with the American Diabetes Association. Haley, nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you as well.
Part of the ADA. Remind us what this group does for our community.
Absolutely. So we are a group that raises money to find a cure for diabetes. So we try to prevent and help find a cure for those living with diabetes, those affected.
I know throughout my time with KUAF, you guys have hosted, you host things, workshops, different types of things throughout the community, don't you?
Absolutely. So we like to attend health fairs. We like to go to different things that spotlight the diabetes community. So we have two events that we put on ourselves, Kiss a Pig and Tour to Cure.
And one of those is coming up, the Tour to Cure. That's kind of hard to say sometimes, Tour to Cure. This is August 3rd, event taking place in Bentonville. This looks neat. What's going to be happening?
So Tour to Cure is a really fun event. It's got a lot of different options for participation. We have road cycling, mountain biking, and a running or walking option. Okay. So if you are active at all, this is a good event to be a part of.
Okay. August 3rd, I'm sure people need to register, right?
Yes, absolutely. You can register at diabetes.org/ArkansasTour.
diabetes.org/ArkansasTour. Again,
yes.
August 3rd. What is that, Saturday?
It is.
Okay. Saturday, August 3rd. Are you looking for, you know, here we are talking in July, but why not? Are you looking for volunteers? You needing help putting this on?
Absolutely. We are always happy to have volunteers and participants, of course.
Sponsorships?
Of course.
Okay. Looking for everything on this.
Anything that anyone wants to be a part of, we'll take it all.
Again, the American Diabetes Association, the Tour to Cure event, August 3rd in Bentonville. Where exactly will this kick off?
It's going to be at 8th Street Market. So we have a really cool venue this year with a lot of fun vendors. So it's going to take place right in front of Bike Rack and the South Market. But all of 8th Street is encompassed into this event.
Thanks so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
As always, if something neat in your neighborhood is taking place, let me know about it. My email is pete@kuaf.com. 91.3 and the Community Spotlight, where local matters.
And so many contributors to this Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large to thank. Contributors included Antoinette Grajeda and Timothy Dennis. Timothy Dennis also mastered our show today in the Harold and Blanchcock News Studio. Reflections in Black is written and hosted by Raven Cook, and it is produced by that man again, Timothy Dennis. The Community Spotlight is written, hosted, and produced by Pete Hartman, and that takes place in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio at KUAF. Additional content for this midweek edition of Ozarks at Large came from KUAR, public radio in Central Arkansas and Little Rock, Talk Business and Politics. You can find out more about them at talkbusiness.net, and the Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History, located on the square in downtown Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF, and 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Green Forest. We'll be back tomorrow at noon and 7 with another brand new edition of Daily Ozarks at Large. Antoinette Grajeda often curates music for us to end midweek editions of Ozarks at Large. She's done that today. She has selected music from Ultra Suede, and she's done that because they will be headlining Gully Park's next free concert. That's tomorrow night in Fayetteville. We'll end today's show with Ultra Suede playing their version of Love Shack, made famous by the B-52s. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your Wednesday.